Hey guys, it's Jessica, founder of Noonday Collection. Welcome to the You Matter podcast. On this podcast, I want you to get ready to be inspired to be more courageous and to own your worth. Get ready to feel connected to the artisan community and to the community where you have a place of belonging, the ambassador community. Because the truth is, you matter, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the conversation. Recently, we had the opportunity to host Rupa, one of our artisan business partners from India, in the Noonday home office. And it was such an incredible experience getting to connect with her and showing her around Austin. We actually attended Austin Fashion Week together. It was super fun. Rupa's been working in the fair trade space for over 30 years. And in this episode, you're going to hear me sit down with her to talk about her personal experience and motivation, as well as her thoughts on how we can overcome our fears to make a real impact in the world. One of Rupa's groups is responsible for creating one of my favorite new pieces for fall. I can't wait to show it to you. I've given you a sneak peek already. It's called the Dokra Necklace. And in this interview, you'll get to hear more about how that piece is made and the fascinating history behind Dokra and that craft in India. It's pretty insane. Guys, I came away from my time with Rupa thinking, I want to be her when I grow up. This is a woman with a passion for impact that can't be put out. Seriously, it was super inspiring. She's savvy, smart, and an inspiration to me. I'm confident that she'll be an inspiration for you too. Take a listen. Hey everybody, welcome to You Matter. I am sitting here with Rupa Mehta, who's actually based in Calcutta and has worked with artisans for 40 years in India, which is incredible. So welcome to Austin.
Thank you, Jessica. Wonderful to be here.
Yes. So we are so excited to bring Dokra to our market for the first time. And Dokra is a certain technique, and we're going to get more into the process later. But that is this new piece that we have. And we've been working in this region for a while, but it's our first time to work with you guys as the intermediaries who are helping us to build capacity in that area. So first of all, Rupa, when you were a little girl, were you like, I'm going to work with artisans someday? Like, tell me how this came to be.
No, it was just, like we say in India, sometimes destiny takes over. Mm-hmm. Actually, I grew up in Delhi. Okay. And I studied economics and then business management. Then I went on to work in the hotel industry as a management trainee. And it was, one of the leading hotel chains in India. And one day I just said, what am I doing here? And then I was fortunate to get work with a company that does high-end women's apparel, but using all traditional craft skills. Oh. And I took to it because at home, my mother was very fond of crafts and textiles, and we grew in a home that was filled with all of that, though I didn't give it much thought. But now when I look back, maybe that's where the love of for crafts and textiles really came up. And then while working for this apparel company, I was exposed to, hand block printers, weavers, people who embroider. And also I was I learned a lot about production.
Okay.
And design, production, and retailing.
Okay.
So that was huge. So when this friend of mine, who was the main driver, when she sort of tried to convince me to get in, join her, I started tentatively, and I kept giving whatever I knew about crafts and textiles, mm-hmm. and what worked and what kind of designs we should do, who were the people that we should be inviting to work with the crafts people. what finally made the decision for me to move from this business to Sasha full time, because mm-hmm. I was doing this part time.
Right.
And from really from my free time for 3 or 4 years.
Side hustle.
Yeah. But doing it with a lot of love and, yeah. you know, enjoying it.
Yeah.
But eventually, because of the possibility of impact that we could make to these communities, if I gave all that I knew, all the knowledge which I had, mm-hmm. all the experience that I had gained, all my natural abilities,
mm-hmm.
if I could work with people here, it would have a much larger consequence, if you like, mm. than if I continued to work in a business where I was paid well,
mm.
but it's all about retaining money in the business and mm-hmm. keeping a small people, lot of people employed.
Mm-hmm.
But in Sasha, what happens is that you are again collaborating. I love the way you use that word, and I've seen it in places in Noonday. It's when you're collaborating with people, you are learning from people and they are learning from us.
Mm-hmm.
And this was so, I think this is what got me hooked,
mm.
Jessica. This is what got me hooked. And I just felt, okay, now I am where I'm meant to be.
Yes. We talk a lot at Noonday about this whole idea of going scared, that we might have certain fears, a fear of failure or a fear of, you know, like we're not going to do it perfectly. Or even as a woman, I think sometimes women can have certain obstacles. I know for me, I had 3 little children at the time that I was really launching Noonday, and I had grown up in a family where the expectation was for the woman to stay at home. And so I was dealing with my own perception of like this perceived idea of what I was supposed to do with my life, but then what I really thought I was going to do with my life. And so going scared is this idea that in order to get past our fears, we just have to walk through our fears. And tell me, did you have any obstacles as a woman along your journey, or what have been some of your obstacles where you've just had to get up and just walk anyway, in spite of being scared?
You know, I was very fortunate. I had very liberal parents.
Okay.
And my mother was working. She was a doctor, and I was one of 3 sisters. So,
okay.
So you know, you didn't face any obstacles. And I got married to a person also who's not very demanding. And,
okay.
you know, it's very, and my mother-in-law, father-in-law, and we all were staying together. And they were, again, very, very progressive. I think the only time I had a challenge was when this friend I was talking about was the main driver, mover. She passed away about 12 years ago, 12, 13 now maybe. And yeah, 13 in December this year. And I think I went through a phase, you know, and because she'd been ill with cancer for 2 or 3 years, and she was the one who was managing the entire business.
Wow.
And, you know, there was a lot of doubt whether I'd be able to do it, not only from myself, but from people around. And
wow.
you know, certain people in the organization had taken advantage of the situation. And, you know, there were things which should not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And even with my friend's family, there were some issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really so caught, one, with the grief of losing a very, very dear friend
mm-hmm.
with whom I'd worked for 30 years, and just short of 30 years, and 25, 26 mm-hmm. years, and also my own uncertainty, and then the climate. But then, you know what, Jessica, you just get out there. I had one huge support in one of the founder members.
Mm.
He was there behind me,
wow.
and he says, you can do it.
Mm.
And everybody would say, okay, forget about the skepticism. They don't know you.
Mm.
And I think I'm blessed, because the one thing I don't do is give up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give up on relationships. I don't give up on circumstances. I don't give up on people. I don't give up.
Mm.
So, and you know, where fear is concerned, we have worked with people, with women, with Muslim community, where they can barely step out of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
But the same women have traveled to Italy.
Wow.
For exhibitions.
Wow.
So that is the potential, the untapped potential. And I think with women, what happens is that somehow there is this lesser need to prove anything. You know, whether it's negative or positive, I don't know. I'm not here to judge that. But I've seen with women, they take things, any input you give, they take it with both hands. And then the sense of achievement, you know, they could go to the marketplace and buy the fabric, negotiate the price themselves. And these are women, when the first time they came to the city, and they had to carry fabric back to the station and were told to please hail a taxi. They were hailing every private car because they didn't know the difference between a taxi and the car. And the same women today.
Yes.
You see, they changed. And usually what it took was a couple of leaders. And you had to spot them.
Right.
These are the leaders who are going to bring about the change through example. Then in the family situation, when they brought in the money, and you know how women are, they're going to get the best for the family.
Right.
Better food, better education possibility, better health and savings. And when this happened, at least in our experience, we saw that the woman starts getting more respect.
Right.
She has a higher self-esteem. She's participating in family decisions.
Wow.
So I think, so what am I saying here is, that there is such a huge potential and fear should never come in the way. I saw, and even now, there are times, you know, when sales are not going as well. And, you know, every time you're starting on something, it's tentative. Oh, will it work? Will it? But I'd say don't waste your time. And as I told a person, that Masala Baby, the proprietor, the designer who's doing that, she sent me a message saying that, you know, you're amazing and inspiring, blah, blah, all that. And I said, okay, you're amazing, you're inspiring. But she said, I'm going to do my best. But there was fear that, you know, that we are investing in this, whether the outcome is going to be and what is it going to be. So I just told her, we're just going to put our best out there and then let it work itself out, and no stress.
Well, and I love what you said, that we can just commit to not give up. If you just make up your mind, you know, I think of the woman listening now, hey, if you're just going to commit to not give up, even if you don't get a call back, or even if you have, you know, don't sell as much as you thought you were going to sell, you take that differently, or you hold it differently than if an exit is an option.
Yes.
If an exit's an option, then you end up spending your energy on doubt and like, what's my way out? But if it's not an option, then you just believe. And then I love the board member that you said just believed in you. And if we just have that one person that believes in us, it's amazing how much that belief can minimize even the skepticism that's surrounding us, and how we can give that to someone when we believe in someone else. Imagine the power that that brings.
Absolutely. You're going to get blank calls. I mean, you know, somebody will not respond. You might have a exhibition or a show or a product line where you don't get what is expected. You tweak it. You see if there's another way of doing it. Let it rest. And just keep going. Because we keep going.
We just keep going. That's just what we do.
And the thing is that when you crack it, the satisfaction. Because I think if you quit, you become a quitter. So it could be one situation today, it could be another tomorrow. But if we don't say that, okay, we're going to, you know, just get over this, you know, this hump you get over, and then you become stronger. And it is, and that's life.
That's life. That's
Isn't
life.
Isn't it? That's life.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more. You alluded to a woman that, you know, isn't allowed to leave her home. Like, let's, you had, I would think you had a pretty unique experience growing up with progressive parents and feeling free to just pursue what you wanted to pursue as an Indian woman. Is that the case for a lot of the artisans you're working with?
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So paint a picture a little bit of what one of the typical women who's making our products, like what are some of the obstacles and what's her daily life like?
Yeah, she still has to look after the food. If she's fortunate and staying in a family where there are sisters-in-law and there's a mother-in-law who will pitch in. And there are some families where some women who have that kind of support. But taking care of the children, seeing that everything is going right, and there's food on the table, and everybody is clean and clothed, and looking after their responsibilities is very much a part of it. So I think for many of our women artisans, they may wake up in the morning, take care of the children, do their household chores, cook, and then come to the center and work, and whatever is collective working, they may do together. Or sometimes they just have time off, so they'll sit together and they'll work. Or if they're working on a single piece, they're working together. But then they take it home. And then after the day's work is done, they'll sit and work on it. And this is for hand embroidery or for some craft where it's possible to do
To
that.
work at home.
But for the artisans that who are putting this jewelry piece together, they would have to be at a central place. But if the beading part of it, the putting it together, they could be given set of beads and they could be
They can
doing it
string it
in
at
their
home.
homes. But it doesn't relieve them of the household chores, and there'll be very few homes where the men will help. In India, men don't help.
What about washing machines and dishwashers
You
and
don't have it. Oh,
microwaves?
you must be. That we have them at home is a miracle. But of course not. Of course
So,
not.
household chores. What's a typical food that one of the women in Orissa is making?
She'd make a dal.
A
She'd make
dal.
a that's a lentil. She
Okay.
may do some vegetables, and maybe fish at some time if they can. But at least and rice,
Okay.
that would be a staple, and maybe some fries with it. And
Okay.
the standard of food, of course, improves as the income improves, and those are. But fish would be a weekend
Yeah,
treat or
treat.
something.
Okay.
And yeah, but I think the help which they can get from families is there once they are earning, but
Yeah.
certainly not washing machines. And
Okay.
they'd be lucky to have electricity,
I know. Well, when I was joking earlier, when I
Yeah.
was visiting the state of Orissa and the village that I was visiting where they make the beads, I needed to use the bathroom. And so someone got up and led me through like a maze of streets and knocked on a gate. And I went apparently to probably the one Western toilet in the community. I appreciated that, but it was just another reminder. It was very isolated where we were and far
I
removed.
know, I know. And even in the village in which they're doing the beads, at least beating the
Yes,
beaten metal,
hammering them.
hammering them, and where they are stringing them together, those are that is a very I mean that's really grown. It's almost a
Okay.
yard. That's really grown.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
has
yeah,
grown.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or at least when I was there, yeah.
Yeah.
So paint a picture now of Dokra. Is this something that's done in all regions in India? What's the history of this
See,
craft?
Dhokra was typically associated with tribal communities, and you see a lot of it in the eastern part of India. So state-wise, and if you're familiar with India, you have it in
Okay.
Bihar, Bengal, Orissa, Chhattisgarh.
Okay.
These are the four states, and they're all neighboring states.
Okay.
So the tribal communities, typically they wandered, and they do less of that now. Now they're more established in one place, and then they wander around. And Dhokra, the metal casting, was done, and it's almost a homemade little hole in the wall. I mean, hole in the
Ground,
ground
yeah.
furnace, and the whole technique of it is very hand done, mm-hmm. and it doesn't require great tools.
Right.
Now they have this thing where they take the wax and they make designs on it.
But they didn't used to have that. They would hand roll and hand do it all.
So it was very, very intensive. But so it was done in to serve the needs of the tribal people.
Okay.
But the community that was moving with the tribal community, I mean, with the tribals always, was not, they're not tribals. They are what we call scheduled caste. Okay. So it's another community who actually works on the crafts, which are used by the tribal women.
Okay.
So they used okra for making, these containers for putting, for storing rice or wheat or other stuff. And, of course, part of it is jewelry. And a lot of that was for rituals, for religious rituals and for idols, etc. And it is, of course, very labor intensive. And it seems to me, as I was going through traveling and learning about this, these communities, you know, what it really impressed me was their aesthetics. How beautifully, even the bow and arrow with which they'd go hunting, the metal, I don't know what to call them, but
for the arrow
and
axe, like the machete.
All that
was done by Dogra and designed.
Exactly. Wow. That was more the hammered.
Wow. Okay.
That's the hammered iron.
Right.
And then even on that, there would be some detailing.
Wow.
Just the decoration, just the aesthetics to make everything that they use, they wear so beautiful.
Wow.
And this was all just for themselves.
Wow.
And you saw so little of it outside their communities being sold. And even if you went to the tribal communities, you saw the smarter businessmen, they had what they call a village heart, a village, or like you have a farmer's market. And that was closer to where they were living.
Okay.
Now if you go to those markets, you find things from you know, the cities, etc. You find mill-woven saris and other textiles, and you want to find a lot of plastics where earlier they would be using metal containers and buckets and all. Now they use plastic.
Okay.
They're given plastic there. So their own crafts and were being substituted with what was coming from the cities without their products finding markets in the cities enough.
Right.
And that's where I think Sasha played a big role.
Okay.
We did play as facilitators, but the ones who really worked at it are our partners, Anisha.
Okay, right.
They
right.
really did all the work.
Right.
And they did, all the follow on and making sure. And they built a very, very good market for them, in a domestic market for them. But now the bigger challenge is, like, why are we here at Noonday? Is exactly for the reason that head, the manager of the unit said, that we want to fill up the second floor as well.
Right.
And maybe move it to more and more women.
Mm.
So they get the skill is spread, because others can be taught. The skill of stringing together and beading is not so difficult. The numbers, and already the number of people who can make these beads, they can also be used, and it's a wonderful way of turning skill into a livelihood.
It is.
Option.
Yes.
And that's what is the main driver.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what brought you here. And so you've been able to take sort of this ancient technique, that's been practiced by these tribal people who are no longer as nomadic as they used to be and now create something that's a little bit more relevant and sellable.
Exactly.
And then we're hoping at Noonday to continue to design into that. We're already designing spring 2018.
I know. I saw that.
Yeah. So we're just hoping to keep doing more because it's such beautiful work, and it feels very expensive. I mean, it is expensive, but it feels really expensive, I think, to a U.S. customer. What are some of the things that you're wanting to get out of your trip here to Austin and to the U.S.?
Well, I'm really always very open to establishing relationships.
Mm. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about you really pursued Noonday.
Yes, I did.
Even they were like, no.
No, I did really pursue because of Anisha.
Oh, right.
Right. Because
Anisha is the local partner in Arista.
They're the local partners whom we've been working with right from the beginning. And we work very closely together. Even we organized a big exhibition in Italy.
Okay.
We had a partner there in Italy, and the government supported us. Where I must add, one of the leading jewelry designers, Italian designers, she developed designs with this group of people, these women, to produce these designs for the Italian market.
Okay.
And we had the exhibition and they sold really, really well.
That's cool.
Yeah. So when Anisha...
So you found out about Noonday from Anisha.
Anisha. To get back to this, then Anisha came into the office and they said, Didi is like, sister, older sister, that, and everybody calls her Didi. So he said, Didi, now there is this organization, Noonday, and, we've had this inquiry through another organization that Noonday works with, and... But I think Sasha should get in touch with them because they seem like a really good organization. They give them a really big order. So then that's when we wrote to Noonday. Okay. And then Noonday said that, no, we're not looking for new partners right now. And fair enough. And they said, okay. So we kept a low profile. But then the person who handles the marketing, we just had a discussion. I said, let's not give up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're saying they're not looking for new partners now.
Right.
The operative word is now. So it doesn't say anything about the future.
Right.
So let's just, and maybe not with this product. So this is the product that we want to push.
Right.
But if we have one foot through the door, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then we sent our catalog links, I think.
Uh-huh.
And we kept doing that. We said every season, we will just write a note and we send that we are alive. Hello.
Uh-huh.
Because we must never stop saying hello. So then in last year, I saw Travis.
Right.
At the Fair Trade Federation. So I was at the WFTO, World Fair Trade Organization, little booth. And then Travis had walked across to meet the president, who's also a board member. And Travis says, hi. I said, hi, you're from Noonday. So he said, yes, I'm from Noonday. I said, you have to work with us. And he says, even Doug Dirks told me that I must meet you because you're from Sasha. And then we talked about it.
Okay.
And once I got back to India, then I wrote a mail. Then I think Travis just acknowledged good to hear from you, but very non-committal.
Right.
So later in the fall, I wrote to Travis again. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you planning to come to India? Because I'd already told him that at least if you're coming to India, come to Delhi.
Right.
And then come and meet us. At least come and meet us, So I wrote, he says, no, I'm not coming and this. And then he followed it up with another mail and say, okay, now we're looking for more new partners.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can start something. Mm-hmm. Then in January, when he said that, I said, okay. And of course, we were visiting your website, and really everybody in the office was very excited.
Mm-hmm.
And also because we heard that you went to Anisha and you visited the villages, mm-hmm. and you went to the project and you spent time with Dr. Sahu, mm-hmm. and Dambu. And we thought that, okay, they're very serious. They are our type of people. You know, they want to know the stories. Yes. They want to know who they're working with. They want to do things right. So we were very keen and we were happy. So in January, I just thought that a visit to the US was due, and I wanted to meet our other mm-hmm. partners. As I said earlier, we don't give up on relationships. We don't give up on mm-hmm. on people. So they were going through some tough times, and it's time for us to go and visit them. And I said, no, this time if I go, I just have to, no matter how difficult it may be time-wise. But and that's why I'm here, and I'm really glad I'm here.
I'm so glad.
I'm glad I'm here, and I think that just also strengthens my belief that if you feel that a place is good to be at, and then you don't give up.
I love that. And I think for our ambassadors to hear, like, you never stop saying hello.
Yes.
I think that's so important, because it's easy to take a non-response as personal.
Personal. Exactly.
But if you don't take it personal and you just keep saying hello.
Exactly.
Still don't here.
Because I think what happens is, and this is something I hope that we can also communicate to people in our own organizations,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, when you step in to the office, it's no longer about you. It's about the team working for the artisan.
Right.
And just bridging that gap and closing it and just seeing that you're the best in facilitating the whole process of carrying what the artisans can make and do
mm-hmm.
to the marketplace, right. to your customers in the best way possible. Understanding their limitations, but if they're not able to sell a particular thing, or they don't like a particular design, or they're mad because we were late with our delivery, it's not personal. We just have to see, okay, how can we do this better? Mm-hmm. Explain it and just not make it personal, because the minute you make it personal, it's, as you said, it's so much wasted energy.
Right, right.
Because nobody's personal about
right,
it.
Right, yeah? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is work. If you just keep that focus,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, every sale
mm-hmm.
Has an impact.
Right.
So if you just think that, and it doesn't matter whether you sell 100, whether you sell 1,
mm.
whether it's a potential sale, even when there's nothing. But the thing is to say, okay, why is there nothing? What can we do better? You know, and so you get leads and you get opportunities. And I think never close out the opportunity.
Right, right.
You know, you don't have to be a pain.
Right.
Don't be a pain and get on everybody's case.
Yeah. But,
you know, gentle
uh-huh.
reminders yes. that we are here. Show up. I think that goes a long way.
It does. You know, it does. Know.
And people do respond.
They do.
They do eventually. Respond. Eventually people do respond. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And you've got to believe in what you do. I think that's at the heart of it, Jessica.
Absolutely.
If you believe in what you do and what is the essential reason for doing it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and in the process, as you said, and which I think is so true, in the process you are, in every interaction you have, in every deal you close,
mm-hmm.
in every effort you make, in every initiative you take, in every creative idea, there is that empowerment,
mm-hmm.
there is a sense of self that, oh, I didn't know I had it in me.
Right, you right.
know? Oh, I could actually do that.
Yes, yes.
And then also there's curiosity. Okay, how do they do it?
Right.
Should I relook at this? And even in that, there's learning and there's excitement. And I think so. I mean, whenever we plan an exhibition or when we're redoing the sample room, if a buyer is coming, I know Devika, she's our marketing manager. Okay. She gets so excited. Oh, this buyer is coming. Okay, let me put these things out because these things will interest. So I think, and that's what's fun.
That's true. That we have to remember the reason. And I think that's why ambassadors love to hear from our artisan partners, because it's easy here in America. You know, we are advocating for people that we will never meet, most likely. You know, I get to meet most of the artisans, but a lot of our ambassadors, you know, might not ever go to India to meet these women. And, we live fairly comfortable lives here. I mean, we do have washing machines and dishwashers and fast food and Netflix. And and so it's easy to sort of bubble wrap our lives to where we don't have to actually be positioned near suffering and near pain. And so part of hearing from you is to remind us that, hey, there are women on the other side of this necklace and on the other side of your ass. And on the other side of you going scared, that are really relying upon you to stand up and walk through your fear in order to create opportunity for her. I just think about that woman who maybe right now is doesn't have a lot of say in her family and isn't allowed to leave her house. But then as she gets more economic empowerment in her home, and then she becomes one of the decision makers in her house.
Exactly.
And that's why we're doing what we're doing.
We're doing, and what's the fear about? What is fear? I mean, fear is a very limiting emotion.
It is.
And I think that's what holds us back from our potential.
Mm-hmm.
You're fearful about going to a new place, or you're fearful about
rejection.
Mm-hmm. I suppose a kind of life philosophy. I follow a particular form of Buddhism, and where you say that, I mean, the only way to live your life, is that, and our prayers every morning is about invoking in us the wisdom, courage. To create peace and happiness for ourselves and peace and happiness for the other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if that is your faith, and also peace and happiness for ourselves comes from realizing our full potential.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only realize your potential when you take every opportunity, and every hurdle is to be crossed. Every negative emotion has to be overcome. It is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
We are all very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But if we have that faith and we remind ourselves that this is the one job or one work I'm doing which is going to create fulfillment and happiness for myself and for another who needs it.
Wasn't that an awesome conversation? I loved hearing about some of the women who we get to impact with our Noonday businesses. Rupa shared about women who, before they had this dignified job, they didn't even know how to hail a cab because they were so unfamiliar just with life outside their own walls. But today, those same women are blossoming into leaders in their homes and in their communities. It really is true that when a woman has fair work, the confidence she gains makes it increasingly difficult for the men in her life to count her out. Am I right? You guys can probably relate to some of that. Rupa and I are dreaming of expanding this work to more and more women in the Indian state of Orissa. This work truly is transforming their entire community, a community that just a few years ago was really living in great poverty. I want you to know that you and your business have played a meaningful role in transforming lives in that community. Finally, I love what Rupa shared about the importance of not taking those rejections that we all get as no responses
personally, because when we believe that every sale, everyone truly does have an impact, it takes more than the fear of rejection to keep us down and keep us quiet. So go for those potential sales. And when you get a no response or a flat out no, count it as a victory because you didn't sit by and let an opportunity to make an impact pass you by. You went for it. You chose to live out a place of empowerment, and you did not choose to live out a place out of fear. If you're like me, you've got a lot of things swirling around in your head right now. So take a minute, gather your thoughts, and then head to the Ambassador Facebook page and use hashtag YouMatter to tell us your takeaways. I love reading them. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll see you over there.